everybody. Welcome to the Canine Connection Podcast. Today, Lori and I have a guest that we are both super excited about. And I think the timing is perfect because after our last podcast, a bunch of people have been sending us emails and asking us about mental management. So we have Julie Bacon here today, who is a mental management expert. She hosts the Q Coach podcast, which is outstanding. You guys should go check it out. And I, if you know me even slightly, you know that I am an absolute freak when it comes to mental management. I'm like obsessed with it, addicted to it. I love it. So super excited to meet Julie and pick her brain. Julie, thank you so much for coming. We're so grateful. Oh, wait. I have to. So not only that, but Julie is a super kind human being, because when Lori and I started this podcast, we did everything ourselves. I would not call either one of us tech experts. I was trying to get this thing up on Apple. It was a nightmare. I'm not going to bore you with the details. Hours and hours and hours, week after week after week, getting nowhere. And Julie saved me. She was so kind. She talked to me. She explained everything very clearly. And so now anyone that's listening on Apple, you can thank Julie for that, because it's nice. So anyway, welcome, Julie. And we'll just start by Julie saying hello and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
I can do that. Thank you so much for having me. I love that you guys have started this podcast. And yeah, when you kind of like threw the call for help out there, I was like, I need to help in any way I can, because this podcast needs to see more people, because you guys are amazing. So thank you for doing what you're doing. And like, you know, women supporting women, like, hello. Yes, so we got to do that. So yeah. So I'm excited to be here. Yeah. I have a podcast, which I think is one of the ways you know me from Mindset Coaching for Handlers podcast in all the places. But I have Bernese Mountain Dogs, which is so always makes me like the odd man out at parties, right? Because I have the non-traditional dogs. But I'm a really good marker dog. If you're not sure, like when you go in the ring, I'm a good marker dog. I got into burners in 2007, and I had like just this crazy young male that I just kept taking to classes, just like I was trying to be a responsible pet person. And finally, the one place I was going was like, look, we don't have any more classes for you. You have to go to this other place. And so I went to this other place, which ended up being a click above in Leesburg. And I walked in and I was like, oh my God, you can do all these things with your dog. Like, and I was like head first down the rabbit hole. I was like in it. I was like, what else can we do? What else can we do? What else can we do? And that began the addiction, right? To dog sports. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody's got the story, I suppose. And I was a horse girl growing up, and I was very competitive and showed all over and did all the finals and all that kind of stuff, nationally ranked, da, da, da. And the reason that matters for this is because it was then when I was a kid that I started getting like really into this mindset stuff, because I would look around and I would be like, wait, that person doesn't have a better horse. They're not a better rider. They're not a better at this, that, and the other, but that look on their face, like it was like back then as a kid, I didn't have the vocabulary that I do now. And I just thought they had this like kind of steely look about them, you know, and they were just so focused and they would just walk in the ring and nail it every time. And I was like, I want to be like that. And so I went down that rabbit hole. Apparently I'm addicted to rabbit holes. And I just started like reading and was able to go to like a few, you know, sports people at that time.
How old were you? I'm so jealous. You're like,
I know. I was like,
ahead of me. I'm like, what the crazy hell? Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah. When all of that was happening, I was like 15.
Wow.
That's amazing. Yeah. And so, yeah, it really was a gift and like a really lengthy foreshadowing, right, of like decades later. But yeah, so I was doing all of that and it was great, but it, and I didn't have the best horse and wasn't the best, but I really like, I dug into that mindset part of it and had, like I said, different vocabulary around it. Cause back then I thought it was like being tough or being like nothing bothers you or like, you know, kind of that like hard aspects that I think is associated with it. And of course now I don't think that at all. But when I got into dogs then, and started competing, I was like shocked that like nobody was doing those things. I was like, well, no, like you're competing. So like, therefore, like it just was like normal to me. Mm-hmm. And so I actually started doing like anyone who follows Mental Mindset has heard of probably Lanny Basham, right? It's very mm-hmm. great, easy to read. If you haven't read him, books about like, it's like a combination of like goal setting and mental management. So that's kind of where I started. I came up with this, like, I didn't invent it, but like I put together, I should say, this like goal setting methodology, because that was the other thing. People are like, oh, I want to get a mock or an arch or whatever. And I'm like, okay, it's like, what are you doing? Well, I'm just going to trials. And I'm like, oh, there feels like a few steps in between, but okay.
Right, right.
I was like, okay, I guess, okay. And like, right. no one really had a plan. They had goals. They had dreams or wishes, but they didn't really have a plan.
Yeah, so like that long-term end goal, but we don't know how we're going to get there.
Yeah, I'm just going to keep doing stuff. Okay, go to class, go to trials, repeat, you know? Yeah. And so I kind of wrote that down and I started with that in coaching, and that was like 9.5 years ago. And in thinking about getting ready for this podcast, I was sort of giggling this morning. I was like, you know, unlike you guys that people were like, oh, we want more of you. Like no one actually asked me to do this. Like no one was into mental management then. And even now I think in dog sports, it's not enough. And I just kind of like forced myself upon people. I was like, look, everybody needs to learn about better goal setting and mental management. So I'm just going to start talking.
I preach about it constantly. I find it utterly fascinating the amount of time and effort people put into their training and what they're feeding their dogs and grooming their dogs and, you know, 8,000 collars for our dogs and all the crazy stuff we do and mental management, not a thing. Or here's my favorite. What book do you read? Well, here's, you know, this one. I read that. And like, you don't just read it and then magically you're changed, right?
Yeah, right. Otherwise, I'd just be sleeping on my Kindle every night waiting for the osmosis to occur.
Right, right.
But they also, I think horse people tend to be more aware of this, probably because it's way more dangerous, right? Like, if you're on a horse and you're tense, that's going to have an impact on the animal.
Yeah.
And that's going to potentially be relatively problematic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that
if you're tense and you're messing up your dog, most people just blame it on the dog, right?
Yeah.
Nothing, we're not going to fall off and hurt ourselves.
Right, right, right. Unless it's spectacular.
Unless it's spectacular.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think the horses also really highlight like your energy, which has sort of been my latest obsession of like how our energy matters and like regulating our nervous system and all that kind of stuff plays into it. Because yeah, to your point, when you are like sitting physically on a horse and you are physically attached to them by reins and legs and all that kind of stuff, like they feel everything, they notice everything, you kind of can't get away with it. And our dogs were like, oh my God, my dog is sniffing. Why is my dog doing that? And we're like, same difference. It's the same thing. They want to get away from your energy. Your energy's just freaked out and your dog's like not into it.
Mm-hmm. Can you expound on that a little bit? The energy and the nervous system and the relationship and how that manifests?
Yeah, I think that, you know, animals are like the ultimate truth tellers, right? They live in the present. They understand their environment so much. They're always tuned in. And our dogs are obviously so tuned into us, right? Like for instance, fast forwarding, when we finish this podcast, I'm going to start saying things like, oh, thanks, da da da, and I'll change my voice and my dogs will all stand up, right? Because they're tuned in to us and mm-hmm. and they're just, everything is always, they're always connected. And I feel bad for them having to listen to my thoughts all day sometimes. But they're always just so connected to us. And so when we change, something, right? Maybe we just get butterflies before we're walking into the ring, or, you know, maybe we're upset or sad. Like, who's not like cried or had something terrible happen and had a dog instantly crawled up on their lap, right? Like, right. They get it. And so when we walk into a ring, and actually an animal communicator believe what you want, but like, just point being, she was the person who said to me, she's like, when you are standing outside the ring, suddenly getting nervous, the dog just thinks, oh my God, are there dragons in there? Like, should I be afraid? Like, why are you suddenly afraid to cross this imaginary line? Like, what should I be worried about? And it just really put like an exclamation point on, you know, again, the energy thing for me, because we have to own our side of the road, if you will. Like, we can't expect them to be like sane and grounded and thinking and have their best like thinking hats on, and we're over there like in full panic about things that probably won't happen.
And the way we react to the judge, right? Like, so many people, for some weird reason, which is why we've had some judges on, to try and be like, look, they're human beings. They're not like these terrible, like horrible, villains. Scary people.
Yeah,
right? But people get like, they're like, oh God, the judge. Oh God, the judge.
Yes.
And then they wonder why their dog's like, oh God, the judge.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right. Right. Yes. I know. It's funny. Yeah. I'm always like, if the judge asks if you're ready, say no. Like, I need you to practice saying no.
Right.
Yeah. So the energy thing has been like my kind of latest obsession because, well, two things. One, I think that finally, like, the audience that has been listening to me for a while is kind of ready for this conversation, right? I don't think that everybody can start with energy. They might not be there yet. So you kind of have to meet people where they are in terms of what they're ready to learn. But I think that we're starting to learn that, like, yes, how we feel or our energy or whether or not we feel regulated versus frantic, or that all of that carries into the ring, into our relationship, into our connection, because nothing will push a dog away faster than you just being in your own head, completely freaking out about something. And you walk in the ring and they're like, gotta go. There's something really sniffy over here. Like, see ya later, maybe, you know?
I think being present for humans is crazy hard. I mean,
so
I worked a long time to be able to do that. I will say, like, you know, I think that habit needs to start when training. Like, even in training, people have, like, when I'm training, an elephant could fall from the sky and I would not know, because I'm completely in the moment, 100% focused on what I'm doing, focused on my dogs. Like, I don't know what's going on around me. And then that's how I am in the ring, right? But like a great exercise is when I make, and I do mean make, my students like go to different places to train, right?
Yeah.
And then very common for them feedback early on is, oh my God, I had a really hard time concentrating. Oh my God, I was self-conscious. Oh my God, all these things. And my answer is always like, perfect. Now you can work on that in that environment, because that's what, and I say, imagine how your dog feels, right?
Right.
But like, how do people learn to become more present? Because present is where everything is happening, right? Like, our dogs are changing moment by moment by moment by moment. And then worse, what a good, maybe I should even say great trainer does is read and adjust, read and adjust, read and adjust. And most people can't, because they're like, they're already thinking about what they want to get done or what didn't work last time or what their last dog did. Or,
well, also too, I feel like moment by moment, things are changing and fluctuating, you know, like one minute everything's okay, and the next minute a dog fight breaks out, you know, seconds later, like being able to regulate, like you're saying, like moment to moment, you know, with whatever's going on in your, you know, what's going on in like stimulus outside of the ring or in the ring at any given time.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot in those questions. And one of the things that on the last part is like, you know, there is so much going on, things happen, and to be able to change requires a certain amount of confidence. And I think that's why, like, you could walk into the ring and you're ready to go, and the judge suddenly like has to blow their nose, and you're like, oh my God, I lost my dog, I'm out of treats. You know, and this like panic ensues over one seemingly small change. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, but a confident handler is like, it's fine. You know, I can do this. I'll have my dog do a spin or some engagement stuff. We'll be back. It's fine. Go blow your nose. Like, I'm good. You know, but there's some amount of confidence. The other part, when you started about like present and staying present and how do people build that, is A, they have to accept, and this is maybe the hardest part, that it is a skill. It doesn't just fall out of the tree. It's not in your osmosis Kindle. You really do have to practice it. And I find that, and this goes to your like making people go somewhere else to train, like the mental stamina that we think we have is not what we actually have.
True.
You know, like it takes a lot, you know. So I love that exercise of just for the human aspect of it, because yeah, you couldn't concentrate. Mm-hmm. You have to practice concentrating. You have to practice staying in the present. And one of the exercises I give my coaching clients always, and I'm sure they all hate me for it, but it's fine, which is, you know, go back to your phone, which is chock full of like amazing photos of your dog and memories and all that kind of stuff. Pick a photo, happy photo, who cares, like just any photo. And I want you to sit and think, set your timer on your phone for like 3 minutes and see if you can think about that day, everything about that day for 3 minutes. And what's amazing is people have a really hard time, even though it's a memory, they have all the information they need, right? It's not like there's no variable.
I remember listening to one of your episodes on this and I remember sitting at a trial and I did it. And I remember I'm like, I can't get past freaking 10 seconds.
Right.
Like I'm thinking about like something and then 10 seconds go by and I'm like, shit, I've been lost on another, down another rabbit hole. And
right.
Not even.
It's wild. It's wild. And yet we walk into the rings and some, especially for obedience, you could be in the ring for like 8 or 10 minutes if things are not going well. But like if you're in the, so you got to hold that focus for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, and your story is very common. Like a lot of us can't hold our focus for 10 seconds without being like squirrel, grocery store, got to do, you know? Yeah. And so we have to really commit. And so I've gone from trying to make people like love meditation, right? To like disguising it in these ways. Mm-hmm. Because it really is the same skill, and it all comes back to being in the present.
I think meditation is very misunderstood. Well, at least I misunderstood it.
Yes.
Because I remember when I first started, well, tried to start because it was a disaster, right? I was under the impression that I was supposed to sit still, and my mind was supposed to be blank for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
Needless to say, I failed miserably.
Right.
And I'm a pretty like determined, like hard-nosed person. Failed, gave up, right?
Yeah, right.
And then one day, I don't remember like what prompted me to do this, but there was an actual real live Buddhist monk.
Wow.
Who was doing a beginner seminar on meditate, how to meditate. What is it? How do you do it? And it was like close to my house. So best thing I ever did, I went and I took it and I was like, oh, I've been doing this all wrong. You're not supposed to have a blank, empty mind. You're supposed to see that your mind is completely out of control. And watch your thoughts and watch what your brain does and observe what it's doing and keep coming back and get lost in your thoughts and go, oh, whoopsie, start again, get lost in your thoughts. Oh, whoopsie, start again. And that gives you such a profound understanding of how little control, conscious control we actually have over
what
is happening up there.
Right. For real. Yeah, meditation really needs a better PR person because I think that a lot of people have that, and they also think like it takes time. Like, I don't have time to meditate. I'm like, you can meditate while you're walking your dogs. Just like mm-hmm. for the 10 minutes you're walking your dogs, just listen to birds. Like, listen just for mm-hmm. bird song. Let them run around, do whatever they're going to do anyway, and just listen to birds. Like, that's giving your brain, your nervous system a break. I think too, we forgot how to be peaceful. And mm-hmm. so when we're in peaceful states, we think, oh my God, I'm missing something. I should be doing something else. I should be doing something else. And we kind of need to learn, again, that goes back to like learning to regulate your nervous system. We're kind of addicted to the next thing, or the dopamine or the scrolling or whatever, because it's input, input. And if we feel like if I'm putting forth effort and I'm getting a response, then I must be doing something right. So it actually can be really disconcerting for people just to like sit in the grass with their dogs because they feel guilt and things and distractions, when that is a perfectly great way to just be present.
Right.
It's also the best place. Like, I solve all my problems, come up with all my ideas when I used to run, or when I'm hiking, when I'm unplugged, right? I call it unplugged because I only reluctantly bring my phone on hikes with me now because people harass me because something bad could happen. And well, they're kind of right, because I wiped out today and it was not fun.
Oh.
But anyway, things could happen, right? So, but it's not on. I never look at it. I don't wear like an eye watch because, oh my God, leave me alone.
Same.
I sit on my patio. The phone is not with me. And I just sit there with the dogs and like, read a book or just sit there. I don't have the TV on in my house or the radio on. It is like, if someone walked in here, they probably think I was a complete weirdo because it's very quiet, because I live kind of, and there's not a lot going on where I live. But I find that that's what, why I'm able to be so hyper productive. Like,
right.
If I'm somewhere and there's a lot going on, I feel like my head's going to explode. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. Like, I can't wait to go home. Like, I'm like,
yeah.
But people are the opposite. Like, they walk in, turn on the TV, turn on the music, sit down, scroll through their phone. In a restaurant, no sooner are they sitting, phone is out. Like,
but here's the thing also you're describing, which is the difference between intentional and not intentional, right? And I actually did a whole like month on this, and like, I've got this membership thing, whatever, but not a plug, just a thing that like, I thought it was so important.
Okay,
we spent, I just thought it was so important. We spent four weeks on it, right? Like, mm-hmm. because I think that, you know, what you're describing in your life is you've built a very intentional life. You know, the TV doesn't come on unless you need something from it. You know, there is no just like doom scrolling just to scroll. There, like, everything in your life is intentional. And the person who just comes home, flips on the TV, does this, has all this stuff going on or whatever, it's not intentional. It's habit. They're being driven by these old habits without thinking about them. And I think the reason I cared about it from a mindset standpoint for competition is I think we do a lot of it's not unintentional, but it's like non-intentional behaviors when it comes to trialing. We go to the same trial on the same weekend of the same month every year. I don't know why. I just go. Do you ever do well? No, I hate that place. My dog hates that place. I don't even like going, but I go every year, you know? So like, we do all this, we do all this like weird stuff without thinking. So like, I want, you know, people to show up and have like, well, what is your overarching theme for this weekend? Like, what do you want to get out of this weekend? And some people just, it's like dead silence when I ask that question. And they're like, because they know darn well not to tell me that they want a cue, because I'll reject that like right off the bat. But, just thinking about everything with more intention, thinks about, well, what do I want right now? Actually, yeah, I want peace and quiet right now. I want my nervous system to rest and recover. I want my dogs to know peace and quiet in the home so they can just chillax and just rejuvenate and recover as well. So that living more intentionally gets you more connected to the present moment And yeah, I now have a habit, like every afternoon when I walk my dogs, we end up sitting in a field, like a small field, just sitting. And it's funny because they got to a point where they would, it doesn't matter, but they go through this one gate and instead of walking all the way around the field like we used to do, they run to the spot and lay down.
That's hilarious.
And I just think it's
so, yeah, that's so funny. I just started doing that too. I'm like, because I just got a new puppy. So I'm bringing the puppy out on all the hikes with us. Right. And then I'm like, all right, we've been walking a long time. Like the first time we had him out, I'm like, all right, well, you're like 9 weeks old. Let's just stop for a second. Let your little short legs rest for a second. And I like sat down in the middle of the field and all the dogs are like, what are you doing? Like, what are we doing? And I was like, and after like a couple seconds of just sitting there, I'm like, you know, this is really nice. Yeah. Like, it's making me just pause and be in this moment right now. And everything's just on pause. It was so nice. So now I'm doing that. Like the last two or three hikes, I'm just like, I just plop down in the field or wherever I am in the woods. And I'm like, this is like.
Well, and our dogs respond to that energy, right? Because they're like, this is nice. There's no doing.
They were being. And they were all like happy. And they were like, oh, this is fun. I like doing this. And it was really cool.
So that counts as meditation. No, that's your gold star for meditation that day. Is that's enough. That's enough. You're doing enough. Yeah.
Right. Right.
I'm just going to jump back real quick to the skill of being present. A very, very long time ago, somebody came and did a mental management seminar and I like read her book and did all the extras. Anyway, I think it was from there. I don't know. So in my head, I'm like, I'm going to visualize a run through, right? Mm-hmm. And where I am doing my job flawlessly and my mind is on the task at hand, right? So I'm like, okay, so close my eyes, enter the ring, set my dog up, walk away. Oh God, I hope he's watching me. I hope he's not looking at, stop, start over.
Yep.
Right? So my thing will be if I mess up, I'm going to start over. It took me months, and I don't mean two or three.
No,
I mean
months. Yeah.
Way many months to be able to go through the whole run through where I'm doing my job and where I'm focused just moment by moment on what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And like now I think it's such an important tool that I have because like I'll watch them, you know, they'll show how the ring is being run. Like, you know, this exercise starts here, blah, blah, blah. So I'll watch it a few times, run it through my head, sit down, visualize how am I going to, you know, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? And then when I can do it obviously very quickly now, but only because like you said, it's a skill that I practiced for years.
Yeah.
And so I do this weird thing. Like for example, when I leave my dog on a drop on recall so that my brain doesn't start pinging all over, I count my steps and I do that in training. So I leave my dog 1, 2, 3, 4, turn feet together, look at dog, dog's focus, call my dog. Like I've got, and I have that for like every single piece of every exercise. And that was super helpful when I dabbled, tortured myself is really what I should say, when I did agility, because I was terrible at it. But that's an important skill to have in agility because everything's moving so fast and oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a few things. One, what I love about your counting steps that I'll just point out is that that's another way to like kind of, if you will, force yourself to stay in the present, right? Because you're counting, you're focused on your steps and you're not thinking like, did that guy just bring a baby into the, like the obedience ring? You know, like, you know, you, it like makes you stay here, right? But the thing about you like taking months to do that, like I'm giggling because that's real. But I also, when I'm teaching it, I never tell people to start there because though most people are not you and they will, it will be horrible. They never get past 10 seconds and they quit because they're like, this is horrible. Like, I'm not doing this. And so what I tell people is think of one piece, one exercise, do one thing, you know, go just work on your setup, or just work on just do the first part of the figure eight. Don't even do the whole figure eight, because it is so overwhelming. And people are like, oh my God, I didn't even make it like three steps into the healing pattern. And I was like solving world peace, you know? And so, but the other thing is when I'm teaching it too, I want people to focus on themselves, but I would rather them think about like, well, where is the dog, and is the dog looking at you, and how does that feel, and where's the judge? Because the more science shows us that the more sense of our senses we can involve in the pictures that we create, the more our brain will believe it as a memory, i.e. that it's already happened. So when we visualize, and the reason like Olympic athletes have been doing this since, I don't know, probably Rome, is they know that the brain basically already thinks it's happened. You've already done it successfully. So your brain now has this evidence of like, oh, I've already run this pattern. I was amazing. Like, it was gorgeous. It was flawless. And so you're building up confidence instead of, like you were saying, that's the first time you tried to do it, like 10 seconds in, you'd already failed, you know, and you're like, I'm out. You know, don't practice failure, practice success, and stop when you get that. And don't make yourself like, I'm going to imagine my whole 5 minutes. Well, maybe not. Maybe just start with 30 seconds.
Yeah, I know. I'm really good at like, I kind of was like, oh, this is as far as I can get. All right, well, I have a long way to go. I'm just going to keep at it. But yeah, that's totally right, because people don't have that. They need success or they give up. And I think that's the biggest problem with mental management is that they want to do it. They think about doing it. So I think the first hurdle is starting it. But then the second hurdle is just the failure rate, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so that's a huge important point that you just made, is like, they need to do little pieces so they can succeed so they can build on that and build on that.
Yeah. People need, they kind of need a starting point. And I think, you know, and I'm sure we'll touch about it, but you know, from being an instructor and seeing many students, like the biggest one, and I'm sure you guys are both agree, is like, you know, the ring nerve thing. Like, I'm just so nervous. Sure. I can't get past that. I don't know, you know, how do you do it? How do you get past being so nervous? I think that's the biggest one. Like, people really need some sort of like starting point guidance on how to start tackling that piece of the mental management.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that even all this talk about it, I also like am hesitant, because I'm like, well, it's very doable. This mental management, we don't want to scare you with all this effort that it's going to take. But yeah, I think people expect it to be easier, and I think they're almost like betrayed by their own brain being such a pain in the butt. And so that frustration, you know, frustration really is, you know, when you have an expectation and it doesn't meet reality, right? That's when we get frustrated, whether it's in training or competition or in just trying to like listen to birds while you walk your dogs, right? But when it comes to nerves, you know, what I tell people is like, you're never going to get rid of your nerves. And of course, that's the depressing first thing to say, but
the truth,
but it's the truth, because your nerves tell you that you care. Your nerves tell you that what you're about to do is important to you, that it matters to you, that you're passionate, the outcome of it, like it all matters. Like you're part excited, but you're part scared to death, but you're willing to do it anyway. So like you always have to have some amount of that. And so people blame nerves for all of their problems.
Right. Which, and I always feel like you had mentioned before, I feel like it does go back to a confidence thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes back to, and confidence really at its base is a trust thing. Like, do you trust yourself that when you walk in the ring, that you'll be able to do the things you did in practice, that you be, you know, that you're able to execute the way that you know you can? And that's what confidence is. But people don't want to hear the word trust because they're like, of course I trust myself. And sometimes I'm real honest. I'm like, I don't trust myself at all. Like, I am not prepared for this. Like, I should have done X, Y, Z and shoulda. And that's when you start spinning. So when people are just, they want like I'm going to answer this kind of in a quick win way. And then of course we've discussed there's like longer term ways to go about this. But from the quick win, I think that when people are nervous at the gate, most of the time it is because they are focused on the outcome. They are already, I always say, you're already at the exit. You're already on the drive home looking at your dashboard, whether it has green ribbons on it or it's empty. You are already thinking about how this went. Because between the in-gate and the out-gate are like 100 things that have to go right before you might ever take home a 75-cent ribbon. So don't focus on the end. You got to focus on what you need to do next, or the two, preferably, you know, not more than three things that you need to focus on in your run. Like if you focus on, you know, your footwork or, you know, your in-between exercises, and if you just hone in on that, chances are your whole run will be better because you get to trust your training. You get to trust that the time you put in and the preparation you did and all those jaunts to Tractor Supply, like all of that is going to kick in. Just focus on your execution. Let the outcome take care of itself. Because usually people say that like, I can pay attention to my footwork on my about turns, or, you know, I can really watch my shoulders, or I can do that. That's in my control. The outcome isn't in our control. That's what's scary. And that's what makes it nervous.
Well, I also think people
it's
have
just about time. The halfway mark, they start.
That's funny. Well, I laugh because my dogs all got up. They were like, where is that coming from?
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, my dogs take their job very, very seriously, which is, it's an ongoing joke because everybody always says, like, you are zesty. You are Zaina. All right, you guys, come on. I think that people, another thing though that people really need to tackle is being really honest with themselves.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, you cannot, like, everything you just said is perfect assuming you did all that work that you're supposed to do, mm-hmm. to be prepared for that trial. Like, nothing makes me crazier than getting to a trial of any kind and having the person be like, either say, yeah, well, you know, he does it some of the time, so hopefully he'll decide to do it today. Or hopefully the dog will not, you know, blow me off today. Or hopefully, like, it's always the dog, right? It's never them. And it's, or they'll be like, well, I know I should have practiced more, but I didn't. Right. But yeah, I hope, right. But hopefully my dog, well, guess what? Wishing, hoping, praying are horrible training strategies. They never work. I've tried it many times. It fails every time. It does not work.
Right.
Like, you can only rely on your habits, on your training, on your preparation, if you can honestly say you've done it to the best of your ability up to that point. And then who knows, maybe things still won't go perfect and that's okay. You'll just go work on it. But if you haven't done that, then of course you're going to be even more nervous.
Right. Well, but it's interesting because even listening to you describe it, like, yes, there is the preparation. But the other thing that you said sort of hidden in there, I think, is like, well, and if it doesn't go right, you'll learn or whatever. And you sort of take that phrase for granted. But for some people, like, if it doesn't go right, they're going to like be head first in the Ben and Jerry's on their way home, right? Yeah. Because it's going to be so traumatic. But the difference is, I think, is that when we start, you know, the three of us on this call, obviously, or on this podcast, are kind of starting from a different point of view, which is growth mindset. Like, for us, like, if we go in and fail, like, it's just, we just learn something. Like, we learn something that from the environment, from the experience, whatever. But for other people, you watch where these runs become, like, I call it precious. Like, there's like, oh my God, there's so much riding on this run. And you're like, is there though? Like, really?
Yeah, right.
You know, like, and so when you do that, when you put all this pressure that, you know, so like you and another person are walking into the same ring to do the same exercises. You have the growth mindset. We're like, I mean, if it screws up, stuff happens, like whatever, I'll deal with it, or I'll learn something or whatever. And the other person is like, no, this is the last trial in December. Like it's my last chance to get this title, to get this cue, to get the breed recognition medallion, whatever thing from my club. Like, this is it. This is it. Right. And they're vibrating with, but it's all focused on outcome, and the outcome, we don't control the outcome. You know, we don't control what the judge does or who walks in the door or the wind blowing. Like, we don't control all that. All we control are the things that we can execute on. And then to your point about like the preparation piece of it and people not being realistic, like, yeah, I think people have a lot of unrealistic expectations and set goals based on those unrealistic expectations, you know, instead of setting goals on like, you know what, I've got a baby dog, it's her first time in the ring. Honestly, anything could happen. Let's get some feedback. You know, those are very different ways to walk into the ring.
Right.
Yeah. So I think people need help with that, right? Because they hear words like intrinsic goals, extrinsic goals, shouldn't care about the cue, blah, blah. And then people are like, you know, then they look at me like, well, of course you care about winning or whatever, you know. Right. And it's like, okay. So how would you explain it in a way that's easy for people to understand, like what kind of goals you should set? Because these goals are so important because they are actually what is going to increase the odds that you will get 100%. The outcome you want.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. I describe process goals as, so, and it's kind of a Lanny Basham thing, right? Like process goals are the things you can control. Outcome goals are the things you want, the cue, the title, the ribbon, whatever. When we think about process goals, a process goal should be something you are 100% in control of executing on. And the thing that people don't want to hear is you're not 100% of control of your dog. You influence your dog. So you've trained your dog. You've, you know, they're
say
ready.
It
they're
louder. You need to say that louder for everybody in the back.
Right? I mean,
sure.
Yeah. And I don't want to give credit to those people who are like, well, it depends which dog shows up today, because I hate that phrase. I don't believe in that phrase. But, you know, they're teammates. They have, the ideal is we both have a good day on the same day, but we might not. You know, it might be their good day, our bad day, or vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. So when we focus on process goals, that means we focus on executing the bits and pieces of the run that put us in a position to maybe cue, maybe. Because like in used agility, like a judge could make a bad call on a contact. The video shows otherwise, but too bad, so sad. Like you didn't get it that day, you know, and you did everything right. Oh, well, sometimes things happen. It's called sport, people. It's hard, you know? So I think that what's interesting is that, of course, I drill this. I talk about this all the time. You know, it's in my planner. It's everywhere. But I'll have clients come back and be like, oh, I get it now. Like all I did when I walked in the ring today is I focused on two or three things or had a mantra running in my head about like trying to be smooth or trying to cue earlier or just think about eye contact. And the whole thing went better. And I'm like, yes, thank you. Because we can't focus on 1,000 things. We think we multitask and really we're just hopping from place to place, right? So we can only think about a couple things when we walk in the ring. And the word connection for me is difficult because I think everybody defines that really differently. But so long as you can define connection for yourself, sometimes maybe that's all you need to focus on. I just want my dog to be like connected to me, or that I can get them back after they get distracted or whatever. So I think simplifying that is critical. But the other thing I'll say is I think the reason people are so kind of goal obsessed, it's not just because we're in a competitive environment. It is because they're desperate for feedback. Like people want measurement. They want to know, how am I doing? Am I better than? Am I on time? Am I late? Am I progressing? Am I two steps back? one step forward? Like, how am I doing? So they'll walk into the ring with these process goals, like, yes, yes, connection, yes, yes, yes. And then they walk out of the ring and 2 seconds later, someone goes, how'd it go? They didn't even say like, did you cue? They just say, how'd it go? And you're like, we didn't get it. We didn't cue. And I'm like, I thought you were measuring on connection. Because you can still not pass and have been really connected. So you should be celebrating the fact that you just were really connected for 5 whole minutes, which is a darn long time to stay connected, for instance. Right. So that measurement and that feedback, they're like, well, I only know how to measure by these like shiny green ribbons. And you're like, well, then we need to work on that. Because
that's a big one. I think that's definitely a big one, Julie. Like that, a lot of people go in with that sort of mentality for sure.
Well, and social media makes it worse. Like I remember years and years and years ago, somebody says to me, so I can't even remember the person, doesn't matter. So we're having this conversation. They're like really frustrated, right? I haven't been qualifying and blah, blah, blah. And so-and-so, who like isn't even such a good trainer, wins every single weekend. And I'm like, every weekend? Yes. Are you sure? I am. I'm like, every weekend? Yes. And was like adamant. And I'm like, fascinating. So I go on said social media's Facebook page, right? Because I know it's not true.
Right.
And I start looking and I'm like, well, A, look how far apart space this person's posts are. And, you know, and then it's like the whole people only post when they do well. Right. And that here's what absolutely is absolutely fascinating. And someone said this to me once and I didn't believe it. And I started paying attention. I'm like, gosh, darn it. They're right. People only remember when you win. So people will look at me and with zeal. This was hilarious to me, okay? You win all the time. That fucking dog flunked so many times. We flunked and we flunked and we flunked and we flunked and we flunked. Did we eventually win a fair amount? Yes. Did we win every time? Absolutely not. Did we flunk a whole lot for a really long time? Yeah. Did anybody remember that? No.
Nope.
All they remembered is you won all the time. And this was, I think this was even before really social media. Like I wasn't even posting, whatever, right? That's why now I think it's so important for me to post like when my dogs flunk, which is like a post I'm putting together for this week, because it's like, it's not true, people. Right. Like, that's not reality. Like you're convincing yourself of an alternate universe that doesn't even exist.
Yeah. And that also, I think, you know, touches upon that whole comparison thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Which, you know, obviously social media.
Well, and comparison, you know, I used to be really hard on people with comparison because it's not helpful, right? It will ruin your weekend fast as anything. And you're comparing your what's inside of your messy head to the exterior of someone else's or their Monday morning Facebook post, which is like shiny and glossy and sparkly and emojis everywhere. And you're thinking that you have to keep up with that, right? But now I have the other kind of perspective or an additional perspective, I should say, which is these poor things, they just want to know how they're doing. They just want to know because all they see is this other person who maybe has a litter mate to their dog or something and or like isn't as good of a trainer or whatever, whatever. And they're like, but they're winning. And because no one is saying to them like, yes, but don't forget, you've made these progress. Like, look back, like go write it down. You know, I mean, the three of us probably have some really good write it down habits that most people don't do. So they can't look back a year and say like, oh yeah, I'm a lot better off than we were last year. Last year at this time, we were, you know, whatever, whatever. And so I think too that, again, that struggle for like measurement or like, am I okay? Or can someone just tell me that I'm making progress and it gets better? Because all I see is this littermate out there, like, quote, winning every weekend.
So what should people do? Like, write it down, keep a log, have a friend hold them, like, what do they do when they're battling, right? Because my students come up with this all the time, you know, well, so-and-so or my dog's this old, you know, whatever, all the usual stuff, right? Like, how do they then do that when they're, you know, when everyone is being measured in their mind, you know, or those things are always out there, right? Like, how do they then, and I mean, I think it takes a lot of, I don't know, courage, right? To walk a different path.
It
to
does.
Walk that path of no, I'm not measuring myself that way. Because look, I'm human. I feel that suction. I feel it all the time. I'm under scrutiny. I'm under pressure. I'm being judged. You know, to walk your own path and, like, you know, feel that pull to go the wrong way and go, no, I am sticking to this path. And here's why. And then, like, how do you do that? Like, how do you know? Yeah, basically, how do you do that?
Yeah. So the well, but I think your question and the way and the fact that it did meander is the point of the question, right? Which is there's so many factors involved in it. It's not a straightforward question. So, like, yes. But I think the other thing that came up even in your question, if you're listening to yourself, is the emotion, right? I think the problem is people also, even if they're going to start like a journaling habit, right? And they go buy a fancy brand new journal and a brand new pen, and they're like, I'm going to write down all the stuff that happened. If they come out of the ring and they do that while they are filled with emotion, then that journal is going to say, like, we suck. I hate us. I did all this prep and it still didn't work. Okay. Well, that is not helpful. That doesn't get you anywhere. That is not like a training feedback. So now I sort of encourage people, like, hey, if you need till Tuesday before the emotions have sort of diffused from your weekend mm-hmm. and you're able mm-hmm. to process that, then you don't write about your weekend until Tuesday. But do not write about or judge yourself when you are in this heightened emotional, high feeling state, because you can't train against feelings. I can't open that book then on Thursday and be like, okay, let's look what happened on Sunday. Okay, Sunday we sucked. So today we're going to work on not sucking. Like that's not a training plan. I can't do anything with that information, right? So if you wait until like Tuesday or whatever you have to do, and you can write down like, okay, like our left turn's not where we need to be, you know, like, the, you know, objectively, here were three things that I would like to work on. Now I can do something with that instead mm-hmm. of it just being this emotional soup. I love talking to my clients on Monday mornings because they are a hot mess, right? Because we get to together then parse and be like, okay, let's take all this emotion and set it aside. Now what actually happened? And yeah. this is where we get more factual and we get more yeah. truth about, like, it wasn't a hot mess. You're saying it's a hot mess because, you know, you're embarrassed. You screwed up the last jump or whatever. But, like, it was not a hot mess. That means if you only screwed up one jump, you did 19 things pretty damn well. So, like, mm-hmm. easy. Like, let's take a second. And then by the end of it, the emotion has been processed out and we can actually look at the facts, just the facts. And then I can train against just the facts. Right? I can't train against the emotions and the turmoil and the hot mess and all of that. That's not useful information. So if you write that down, whether it's in your journal or your planner or whatever you're using, it can just be two words. It can just say left turns. But then now you know you could look back for trends, or you can look back and see what you need to work on. It can inform your training plan for the week ahead. Now you can do something with that. I'm all for journaling emotions as like a way to like process them and get them out, but that's not a way to, it's not a training plan.
Right.
I give myself like a deadline. I don't know when I started this at some point in my mental management journey, but like even in life, you know, like, cause this is really all a parallel to life. I think
this
is why I'm so like obsessed with it, not just because I saw the results in competition, but because it's impacted in a positive way, like every area of my life. But I give myself a deadline, right? So something bad happens, and you know, bad stuff really does happen. Sometimes
it does.
It's just a trial and it's like, yeah, I'm upset about it, even though it's not a real life problem, but whatever. I allow myself X amount of time, right? So I'll say, depending on how bad it is or whatever, you have until this time. And until that time or until that day, You can eat all the crap you want. You can drink as much wine yep. as you want. You can lay on your couch and feel sorry for yourself yep. and go down a rabbit hole. But once that period is over, and I'm like a freak about it. Like if I say Monday morning, I get up Monday, I'm like, it's in the rear view. We're done. Yep. Like yep. onward and upward, it is over. And then I tell my students, be a detective, right? Yes. Which is exactly what you said. Gather the data, right? Look at the information, figure out how we can solve the problem so that we can, it can be better next time. And that's it, onward and upward. I mean, I'm not saying that's for everybody. That's how I roll. That's yeah. what I do.
Yeah. One of my listeners called it, you get 5 minutes in the bitch barn and then you have to move on.
Yeah. It's true. Well, I'm getting more efficient in this because I don't want to stay there. You know, like we do, we have moments. Like it happened to me at the qualifier in my last class, and I came out and it took everything for me to like calmly put my dog away, and it was a handler error, and I had to go outside and I like had to vent and blow off some steam. But I quickly now, like, I don't want to stay there. I don't want to stay in that mindset because I'm right. like, I need to figure out what I did so I can fix it. You know, like I want to progress. I want to get out of that state and progress.
Well, and you did something that some people have to be told to do. Right. And so I don't know if you learned that or you just developed it or you just did it instinctively, but like we have to develop those resilience skills, right? That's part mm-hmm. of developing resilience. Like, and I tell clients like, what do you need right now? Like, ask yourself, what do I need right now? I need to get out of this building. I need to walk around. I need to eat a pint of Ben and Jerry's. I need to, whatever it is, like, yeah. what do you need to start processing this so that you can reset? And then do you have some sort of resetting things that get your mind kind of back in the game? And the other part of it that this brings up, which this is super uncomfortable for most people, is this concept of forgiveness. Like, mm-hmm. especially when we make a mistake and it's on us, you know, mm-hmm. we hold grudges against ourselves and we hold grudges against our dogs. Sure. Our dogs too. We're like, well, this one, I'm worried that my dog's going to do this thing that they did 2 years ago at this place when the fan came off, and then my dog, like, stories for days, but yeah. like, let it go. Like, at some point you have to forgive that you made a mistake and you did it. Great. You learned from it. You're moving on. And it's, of course, it's easy for an outside person to say, let it go. But it just really is about like forgiveness and realizing that it's part of the game. It's not the last mistake I'm going to make. Like, yeah. what is my reset routine and how do I get myself back in the game? Cause I've got another run today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Football has this thing where they're like, goes back to what you were saying with the team sport, right? Like, someone drops the ball or fumbles it or throws an interception. They go back to the sideline. Everyone comes up to them and smacks them. And it's like, don't worry about it. Like, next play, next
yep,
play.
Next
like,
play.
It's done. Yeah. It's over. Yeah. Like, we do the next thing. And they support their teammate, right? And really, you're your own teammate and you're your dog's teammate. So right. they support that teammate. They're like, hey, you know, let it go. It's done. You know, and you'll see sometimes a younger person and they're like beating themselves up and yeah. everyone's coming up to them and they're like, dude, enough. Like,
yeah,
get right. at, cut the shit.
Yep.
Get over it. Move on. Like, on to the next, on to yeah. the next, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's so important. I also feel like when we're caught up in emotion, because I have a long history of this, right? You're a victim, right? Because yeah. if I suck, then I just fucking suck.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Well, that's a bummer. Now I'm a victim. Like, I have no control over my life or over, you know, how I'm going to feel. And I don't want to be a victim. I was a victim. I do not want to be a victim. This goes to what Lori said, right? Like, I do not want to feel like that. I don't want to be a victim because my dog got up this morning and decided to screw me. Like, that's just right. like, come on. Right. right? Like, right. I want to be in control of my yeah. life, and I right. want to be in control over how I feel. And I want to be in control over the relationship I have with my dog, right? And the only way I can do that is to let it go, be a good teammate. Like you said, like forgiveness, like that's huge, right? Like I never used to be able to forgive myself. Like forgive yourself, forgive your dog for God's sakes, right?
Exactly.
And like control what you can, which is left turns.
Yes.
Being a better, you know, improving my mental management so I don't make that same mistake in the ring that I made the last time. Like what are the things that control the controllables, right? Like I tell myself that all the time. Control, because my mind is a terrible place to be. So if I'm not constantly, I mean, I'm telling you, nobody wants to be in there.
Same.
Like if I'm not managing it constantly. So like, that's what I do. I walk in, I'm like, control the controllables, control what I can.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I think that's connected or underneath maybe all of this entire conversation and why competition is hard and why we get nervous and resilience and all of those things is that, you know, putting ourselves out there is vulnerable. You know, and nobody likes to feel vulnerable, right? I mean, like I joke about the fact that I'm a recovering control freak, but I don't know that I'm that recovered, you know, like I would rather be in control of all of it, you know? And so to put myself in a situation where, you know, I'm vulnerable of making my own mistakes. My dog might make a mistake. A judge might make a mistake. Hot air balloon might land next to me. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. It's all vulnerable. And so what you see, I think, in competition is everybody's comfort levels with being vulnerable and putting themselves out there are. And yay, great. Those of us who've been doing it and failing for longer, you know, they, like you were saying, they think of our successes over time, but like I've also been failing for a lot longer. And so now I'm comfortable failing in public. Like what a skill to have. But it is, to me, that's like the better skill to have because huge. My life doesn't hinge on that, nor does my happiness about my dog and all this other kind of stuff. So now when I get nervous, I ask myself like, ooh, what is this telling me? And how much of my nerves is excitement? Or like, what is the feedback here of just being nervous? Do I not feel like I was prepared? Am I not sure what my baby dog is going to do? Like, am I a little higher risk of what might happen because she might not be ready and I'm pushing her a little sooner than she should be, whatever, whatever. Like now I ask, what are my nerves telling me? Instead of like, oh my God, the last time I felt like this, the wheels came off. I shouldn't even walk in the ring. I should just go home and put my head back under the covers, right? I have a different reaction to my nerves now.
It's so good what you said. It's so, so, so good because it's completely true, right? It's just highlighting your personal insecurities, right? So like when I get nervous, I do that. I check in. Why?
Why?
Because I'm not good enough. Because I have imposter syndrome. Because it's always a reflection of my own personal
inner thoughts
and insecurities and my habitual thought patterns, like it all, you know, that all goes back to my history, et cetera, et cetera. Like, or why am I not happy that person did well? Jealousy. Well, oh God, you're jealous. Why are you jealous? Like, you know, so now I try and go, oh, because it's kind of a Buddhist thing to do, right?
Like, yes, it is.
This is showing me an area within myself where I'm weak, well, not weak, but where that I could use more work on, right? That I should. And I mean, it still happens to me to this day. Like Lori, I said to Lori and, you know, our other friend at the regional, like the first 2 days, I don't know what the hell I was doing because I was not mentally prepared and I was overcome with my usual go-to, you know, like, Zesty won the NOC. It was a fluke. I don't even know how it happened. It was an accident. Yep. It shouldn't have really even happened. Like, I'm not good. I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, why am I even here? Like, you know, people are going to see the truth of the matter, which is that I'm a fraud. Like, I'm not good enough. I don't deserve to be here. Like, all my typical things.
Sure.
Right. And I'm like, gosh darn it. Like, I didn't pay attention. I didn't do my job, right? Which was, I did not come in with mentally prepared. It was until the third day that I finally got my shit together, you know? And I'm like, oh my God, like, it's just another So anyway, 2 points.
Yeah.
One is, yeah, it's a reflection of my weakness, my whatever. And it's just, it's good. It's information that says, okay, you need to keep working on this, right? But this really has nothing to do with my dog or the result. It has to do with my inner things that, you know, are there that I need to keep working on. And
yeah.
My other point, I can't remember what it was. So.
Well, but I think it also is like, I use that Brené Brown phrase all the time. It's like the stories we tell ourselves, right? Like, so all of that stuff, which I think is similar to all of us, like I've had all of those same thought patterns and more, which A, we're not alone. We all are like this, you know, kind of a thing. This is normal. But we invest so much time and energy in creating these stories that aren't true. Like, they're not even based in fact, by the way. You know, if like a historian was running around behind us, they'd be like, what are you talking about? That's not at all what happened. You know, like, this isn't even real. So we tell these stories. And if we took a tenth of the time that we spend telling these stories about ourselves and like spend it on like positive visualizations, we'd be different human beings, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the energy goes there because our brains are designed to protect us. And they think that like, well, if you just stay home and in bed, nothing bad will happen to you today. Right.
Stay in the safe zone.
Exactly. Right. And so we choose to put ourselves out there. I mean, I always say like, you know, that it's that old Roosevelt quote, right? The joy goes to the person in the arena, right? Who's like, yeah, has true. The courage to step into the ring. And we do that all the time. All sports people do, but like we do that all the time. And the other random thought I had about all of this morning, as I was thinking about this podcast, was that, you know, we so often, I think, as in this, I'll say business that we're in or in this sport that we're in, you know, the world is going to try to tell us that like, oh, they're just dogs. They're just pets. Like this, like, why are you so serious about this? Like, why do you get nervous? Why do you care? Why do you whatever? And the thing is that I think we're always a little bit fighting like what society thinks of that, the fact that we play with our dogs and that it maybe is a living or maybe is just our passion. And no, it's a sport. It's important to us. You know, a lot of my clients and I joke about like, are we having fun? And we think fun is like completely the wrong word because fun is light and frivolous and like something you play with in a field or whatever. And we're like, no, this is serious. This matters. This is a big deal. So we get to feel like this, like a pro tennis player, you know, feels about their sport or about anybody else. So we get to feel all of those imposter feelings and all of those, you know, not good enough things or wonder if we can have confidence in ourselves when it matters or whatever, because that's the game that we've put ourselves in. And like, pat on the back to everybody who like fills out an entry and like walks into the ring, because it's not easy.
No, it's not easy at all.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because that in and of itself takes courage.
Yes.
You know, to put yourself out there. And then we don't give ourselves credit for that, right?
Correct.
We do it, and then all we focus on when we come out of the ring is all the things that didn't go well and everything that went bad. Like, I always tell people, you need to think about, okay, that's great, but you also have to go and reflect on like what went well.
Yes.
Or here's my favorite. Like, I won the class, but nobody else qualified. Well, you beat them.
Yeah, right.
You beat them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I had a client call this week and she was like excited about how her week went. And then she's like, yeah. It was great. The weekend was great. I loved it. Like, okay. But I want to talk about the weekend coming up. And I was like, whoa.
Right.
I said, we are not just leaving behind a perfectly good weekend. We are going to mine like everything that went well so that you can do that again. Like, what went well about your prep? What went well about your rituals? Like, are you proud of yourself because you packed some decent protein and enough water this weekend? Like, what did you do well? Because you need to know that in order to do that again. You know, we have to look hard at the stuff that went well, not just like that old Seinfeld. Don't yada yada the good parts, you know, like just, you know, you have to really.
Yeah, and reflect on it, because we'll ruminate incessantly for like days and hours and weeks about something that didn't go well, right? And then some, and I used to be guilty of this.
Sure.
I would come out of a weekend. I would have had a quote unquote on paper great weekend, right? Like ribbons, the whole nine yards. Walk in the house, immediately the ribbons were put away because it's over. Yeah. Like immediately, yeah. It's over. And then I'd sit there staring at the video and tear it apart, right? This could be better. This could be better. This could be better. This could be better. Right now. Now what I do is those ribbons stay on my dining room table for a full week. And
smart.
I force myself to look at them and think about like things like how much work went behind them or whatever.
Nice.
I look at my videos to analyze them, but I also then stop, rewind, and go back and watch them like a spectator, right? Because if I stand back and watch it like a spectator, I'm like, wow, that was really nice.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, so surprised because I don't remember it looking like that. All I remember is all the things that weren't any good. Well, Laura, you've had that, right? Where I looked at where I came out of the class, I'm like, oh my God, it was terrible. Zesty was like so miserable and blah, blah, blah. And then I look at the video and I go, oh, I looked at my video. It didn't look as bad as I thought it did.
Right.
So I think that, but that's human nature, right? Like
sure.
All day, you can work all day and everyone can be like, thank you. So nice. So nice. And then one person bitches and that's all you remember.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's because we're unfortunately wired that way because that's like, we're always scanning for danger. Okay. If everything's right in this room, then I don't have to worry about this. Now my mind's free to worry about the next threat or whatever. And so unfortunately, our brains are just permanently broken from our ancestors and cave
Thank
dwellers because,
Thanks,
yeah.
Cave
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But if we're aware of that, right? Like,
yes.
And that this is where we circle all the way back around to the beginning and being present and being mindful and being aware of what we're thinking and what's happening, right? Like I'm the same, one person complains or one bad thing happens. I feel myself spiral and I go, you're not a caveman. Like I do these wacky strategies
to help
myself remember, like that's not my whole day. Now go back and think about all the good things that happened today and then it works, right? Because if you're aware of why it's happening and kind of like you said earlier, that's not really the whole story or the whole picture. The whole picture is, like the bulk of the day went well, then you can change that narrative. You can change that.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
And that's why I do these things that I do, these strategies, because I understand this is how my brain works. This is how it then triggers me emotionally. So therefore, let me use these strategies to try and change that.
Right. Right. And I think the other thing too is knowing our own inner monologues and like you are a funny person in real life. So like the fact that you say like you're not a caveman, like I get it. Like of course that's what you would say to yourself because that totally makes sense. You know, we can't just adopt other people's like mantras. You know, if I said to myself like I am whole. My inner monologue would be going, what, who are you talking to right now? Like what is even happening? You know? So we have to say things and, you know, if we can't believe like the whole thing, like if we say like if 1 minute we say we suck, the antithesis is not like I'm the best handler in the world. It has to be something you believe. And if you're, you know, have a funny sense about you, you be like, well, you're not where you used to be, you know? And if that's all, but that's better, right? That's better than saying to yourself that you suck, you know, or, you know, I suck less than I used to, you know, if that's still not great, but like we're getting there, you know what I mean? Yeah. So we have to be, again, it goes back to being realistic. And yeah, as soon as you're aware of the behavior, don't use that behavior to like beat yourself with it and be like, oh my God, I'm terrible. I'm still having these thoughts. It's like, no, you're going to have these thoughts. Like there are people I say like, look, you're wired like this. You're going to fight this for the rest of your life. We're not here to change that. We're here to give you strategies about what to do when that comes up.
Yeah. Right. I think that's what a lot of people need too. You know, that's what they need is those strategies of like, well, I can't get past it. A lot of people just can't get past those thoughts and that mindset that they fall into.
Well, or they just accept it. Oh, I'm just like this. I'm just this is how I'm always going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, that's all so important. And I think that people look for a cookie cutter, right? They want that magic pill.
Sure.
In two ways. A, they want the magic pill that's going to work quickly, but they want, like, if when people say, what do you do? Or what do you listen to? Or what do you read? Or I'm always like, that may not work for you at all.
Sure.
Like my strategies may not work for you one iota. Like what I read, you may go, oh my God, this is the least helpful thing I've ever read in my life.
Yep. Well, it is, it's gotta be like custom fit to the person. Cause we're all so different, right? Yeah. So you're right, Petra, because I get that too. Like I just got that question this weekend when I went up to teach for a club, and they were like, well, what do you do about your ring nerves? And I'm like, well, I can sit here and tell you what I do, but it can be totally something that you're not going to resonate with at all. So,
right.
Well, yeah. And then you won't do anything, cause you'll go, oh, well, that doesn't work.
Exactly. Yeah, that didn't work.
Or like you guys have taught 1,000 seminars, you go to the seminar and the person says, well, I've tried that once. It didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you're like, try it again. Mm-hmm. Let's stick
try
with
it another 100 times.
Yeah. Or let's stick with this or yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's work. But like you said, like, it's not work in the sense that it has to be a terrible work or a chore. Like if I wish people, like, it's almost like it would be so nice if we could give them a glimpse of the end product, right? Because I think that would really motivate them and make them understand, like, you don't have to work on this for an hour a day, every day. Like when I first started this, I was like 10, 15 minutes, 5 days a week. And it didn't have to be like sitting there in my chair. Like I could write mantras on index cards and they would be all over my house. And it was like, when you see it, say it out loud. Right. So that doesn't take a long time. I could do it in my car. Like I could do it, you know, when walking, whatever. So you can really just do small little steps, put it into your everyday life, and you're still going to see progress.
You are. Absolutely. I think what you're saying, though, about seeing the end product is really a big, like, that's an exclamation point, even for me in this moment of like how to phrase it. Because when we are working on handling skills with our dogs, we do have a good sense usually of what we want the end product to look like. You know, we kind of know whether we're shaping something or whether we're training something or whether we know what a qualifying run looks like, more or less. And so, but with mindset, because, you know, unfortunately, right, it's a lifelong thing that we're always going to be evolving, right? I'm going to be better 5 years from now than certainly I was 10 years ago. So we're always evolving it. There is no like, done. You're not so, and there's not a clear like end product or like, hey, when you're done, you will have the confidence of Sally Jane and here's Sally now, you know, and like we can't point that, you know? And so I think it's harder for people to like keep the marathon training going, right? Or like, oh my God, you think like it's like working out, right? How many people give up working out? You mean I have to work out every day? I mean, yeah, like you can't just work out for a month and hope it lasts the rest of the year, you know, like, so it kind of becomes a thing that you practice. But if you're a serious competitor, like I think it's like one of the most important skills you can be practicing, because a good mindset can walk into a ring and like cover like a not very ready team, maybe, you know, whereas you can have the readiest team in the world. And if you have a meltdown at the in gate because they put someone else in front of you, like, and that undoes your day, that, okay, no one's ever going to see that awesome team.
Right.
I think I remember the day exactly. I remember reading this book and like every chapter was like, don't do this, do this instead, right? Don't do this, do this instead. And every single chapter in the book is was relevant. Like I was doing all the things you're not supposed to be doing. And at the time I had Tyler, he was a young dog. He was only my second dog. I didn't even know, but I don't know how I knew. Somehow deep down, I just knew he was a special dog, right? And I was also very aware that like when I was training, I had expectations, right? Like, and that my dog was giving me 100% effort every time. And I just had this epiphany. Like, I was like, I am asking my dog to do all these things. My dog's giving me all he's got. And I am doing every single thing wrong, like in this, according to this book, right?
Yep.
And I'm like, that's not fair.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that is not fair. Like, I am not being fair to my dog. I am not being a good teammate. Like, I'm being a terrible teammate. Like, what am I even doing? And it's kind of interesting because I was never able to see that when I was cycling and competing for myself, right? Because I was never nice to myself.
Right.
But when it came to my dog, I was like, oh, well, I don't want to let my dog down. Right. Like I don't. So my whole goal for the next year was that I was going to work on every single, you know, chapter by chapter, is going to work on the things and master them like one chapter at a time, like however long that took. That was what I was going to do. And then a year later was the first time I had ever went. I had never even been to a national. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know anything. So my whole goal was that I would do my mental management to the, you know, hold myself accountable and do my mental management correctly. That was my goal for that weekend. Do my mental management.
Love it.
And I did. And as a result, he won. And the only reason he won is because I did my mental management.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
so
in big events,
the result will come. Like, yes. So the whole moral of that whole story is, yes, we have to work on it. Yes, we have to work on it forever. But those results do come. And they don't just come in that tangible outcome, like, quote unquote, I won a national. It also comes in, like, I'm more peaceful. I'm more content. Right. I'm more happy. I'm way more confident in life, not just in competing. Like, I am a happier, more content human being. And that continue more peaceful human being, and that continues to evolve, but it started happening a long time ago, and it just keeps getting better and better and better.
That's super cool. Yeah, and it's true. It's little steps, but they add up, just like little steps with our dogs will add up, you know. Right. Like, but I do want to put one thing is that I, you know, big events really undo people, and. Yeah. I think the obvious things are all like, oh my God, it's a big event and like pressure and da, da, da. Like those are like the obvious things. But I think what happens to most people is that they don't do what you did, which is they sort of abandon all the things that got them there, all the habits that they did on the weekend trials, like all the mornings, all the mindset, all the, even the preparation or whatever. And they like, oh my God, it's a different schedule. Or like, you know, in agility, for instance, some of these things, you walk the course in 7 a.m. and you don't run till 10 or something crazy or whatever. And so they don't do what they did. They give it all away. They don't stick to their rituals. They don't stick to their mindset. They treat it as different. And they put these events on these giant pedestals, which means they're already lower than the event. They already think, oh, I can never live up to that. When in essence, they need to double down on the rituals and the things that work and the things that make them feel grounded and the things that make it feel like just another regular trial. So yes to mindset, and don't just cram your mindset right before you go, right? You got to work on it all the time.
I listened to your podcast on the way to the trial, Julie, and it didn't work.
Yes.
One time. I listened to it one time on the way there.
That's right.
And then it didn't magically fix everything.
Yep. Well, I did have someone. Well, okay. I did have someone recently say to me, like, I tried the breathing thing and it didn't work. And I said, well, it sounds like you were already a little bit over the edge. She's like, I was. But the breathing, it just doesn't work.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like everything. You have to practice it. You have to start small. You have to and work on it. You have to be consistent.
Yeah.
Well, and treat it with the same reverence that you treat any other skill. Like you didn't just suddenly get good at healing, you know? I mean,
Yeah.
It takes time.
That's such a great point. Yeah. So many great points. This was so good. Thank you so much. I feel like I'm like, all right, I think we might have to have a follow-up down the road because I feel like I could just, but you know, then I'm
great for me anytime.
I feel like I could keep talking about this like forever. And then like, I didn't even look at the questions.
It just rolls. Yeah. No, so I'm, good. This was great. Thank you so much. I will come back anytime you'll have me.
Thank you so much.
And hopefully you'll return the favor.
Oh yeah. We'd love to. And thank you for just being out there and putting this out there because, there are resources, but they're not always related to dog sports. And I think it's hard for people, especially when they're starting out with mental management stuff, to take something from another sport or something else and then like kind of tweak it and, you know, manipulate it so that it works for what we're doing. So you're actually doing that, which is amazing. And then
I do think it helps that I do a bunch of different stuff too. Yeah. And I do it with dogs that aren't supposed to do most of it. So it's fine.
Well, we're so appreciative of you being out there for sure.
Yeah, we appreciate you. We really do. Thank you so much. I know this is going to be, it's going to help people tremendously. Personally, I just love doing it because I love this stuff. And you made so many great points. And like the way I took so many notes, because even just sometimes the way you state something where it's like a little bit differently, you word it a little differently. And I'm like, oh, that makes so much more sense. Or that's going to be so much easier for people to understand and grasp onto that.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's really, really good.
Yeah, and relatable. Really good.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank
You're
you so much,
welcome.
Julie.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a great one.
Yeah. All right. You too.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye-bye.